It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Blindly obvious, it's clear as can be. The things we ignore, but we all can see. Darkness, it flees when scattered by the light. Blindly obvious, hidden in plain sight.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff, and we are happy today to bring on a guy who needs no introduction, Flag City's second favorite big radio personality.
Oh, come on, man.
Shout out to the Big Kahuna, of course. Big Dave, welcome to the show, man.
Why you got to start by just cutting me deep?
Well, I had to initiate you.
Jeez.
Yeah, I needed to cut the finger, get a little blood, kiss the ring, you know?
Gosh, Flag City's second favorite big.
Yeah, Kahuna's going to appreciate that so much.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. That's better. You know, at least you're at least one of the bigs, right?
Yeah. Well, I like to think I'm the lead, but I think we all know where my bread is buttered, and it's usually him.
Well, anyways, so Big Dave's going to tell us kind of how he got to be a big guy from a small town that became a radio superstar.
Big guy from a small town.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, that you said a lot in that sentence, Tyler.
I'll write your bio for you if you need.
I just ate too much. That's how that happened.
Yeah. Well, at least you grew up and set out.
Tony's Pizza got me young, man.
Tony's Pizza. No, but how did you, what drew you to radio? Did you know as a kid, you know, you wanted to jump into radio, or did somebody tell you, hey, man, you have a really good face for radio?
Yeah.
Golly.
All right. So it's on. It's funny. So being from Macomb, you'll appreciate this. What started it for me was Bill Calderhead.
All right.
Who was
He's a science teacher, right?
Science teacher, yeah. Okay. Passed away a couple of years ago, but truthfully, I owe all of it to three guys: Bill Calderhead, Rand Russell, and it's my first time with a microphone. Bill Calderhead, Rand Russell, and of course Kahuna, who really gave me a shot, and Dave Glass to a certain extent too, just in case he's listening. So Mr. Calderhead told me probably sophomore year of high school. He goes, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing commercials or voiceover, any of that?" Because I've had this voice since I was a kid. I mean, since like second grade, my voice was a problem for me all through elementary school, music class, and all that stuff.
Because it's so high pitched.
Yeah, that was a real problem. It was just too soprano, really, for my liking. And so I said, you know, I never really had thought about it. He goes, "You ought to look into it. You've got a pretty good voice for it." And I thought, So I looked around and I found out that a lot of the voiceover guys start in radio. And so I went and knocked on the door at WLFC at the University of Findlay. I'm 16 years old. And they just needed somebody to do an air shift Thursday nights for 3 hours. And so I started doing that. And I knew a little bit about music. And then like the year after that, going into my junior year, I learned a lot about music. Threw me in a studio. And that's what's great about college radio, man. They threw me in a studio full of CDs. They were like, "You got 3 hours. Have fun."
So you basically just get to sift through all of your favorite music. And
I did.
Pick out what you want to play.
Yeah, and this is like 96, 97. So I'm playing Stone Temple Pilots and Smashing Pumpkins. And I'm having a ball, man. And then Rand, our art teacher through high school, who was a great friend of my family since I was very, very small, pulled me aside one day. And he's like, "Hey, I want to introduce you to a band." And he handed me Led Zeppelin's box set, which completely changed my life. I mean, that dropped the needle on the whole thing for me. I was like, I want to crawl inside of these songs, man. And I didn't play an instrument. I played drums. Well, when you're a Zeppelin fan, you play drums, you can crawl inside any of the songs. That's true.
True.
But
true.
I really wanted to just wrap myself around rock and roll, man. And so I started listening to 106.3, which was Kahuna's radio station. And
man, the king still sits. He was on the radio clear back then.
He's a very old man. He's
is this Moses? Like he's reincarnated? Jeez. He's like, the year was 1881. Kahuna just started.
Tumbleweeds going by.
Shortwave radio.
But first time I was ever on commercial radio was I called into Kahuna's morning show because he was doing a bit about, he was playing a Zeppelin song and it was like, name this tune type bit. and it was Custard Pie, and I knew it, and I called, and I got on the radio, and I still have the tape of that somewhere. I don't know where it is, but I have it somewhere.
That's awesome.
So anyway, those kind of things, the music kind of pulled me into it. Rand got me turned into some music as art, not just entertainment, and that really flipped a switch for me. And then I kind of had to start figuring out what I was going to do for a living about that time. And I knew I was going to go to college. My mom had been a professor at Ohio Northern for years. I knew I was going to go for free. I just had to pick what I was going to do.
Sure.
And God bless her for not pushing me into something else, because my mom is an incredibly smart person. And she could have said, you can be an engineer, you can be a doctor, you can get a pharmacy degree at ONU. And I said, I think I want to study broadcasting. I had a free ride at a pretty prestigious university for stuff like engineering and pharmacy and law. And I went to the communications department and she didn't try to steer me otherwise. She was like, if this is what you want to do, do it. And man, you talk about being fully into something. It was every Friday and Saturday I was on the radio, midnight to 6 a.m. Yeah, I'll do it. You know? And that was most of my college career, which actually kind of screwed up my whole college experience, because I was never on campus. I mean, I'd do my stuff during the week. Friday night, I'm out of there. I'm going to do Ottawa Glandorf basketball games. And then I come back to the studio and do an air shift on the country station overnight.
Sure.
Crash and burn at my parents' house, and then turn around and do it again Saturday night, and then go back to school on Sunday.
So what you're really saying is that kept you out of trouble.
Well, it was a different kind of trouble. It was a very specific type of trouble that I avoided during college, but there was other types of troubles that were to come, foreshadowing. But there's a moment that I was like, I got to do radio. And it was junior year of high school, playing in the pep band at Macomb, and Tom Summers came to a game. Tommy was a morning guy on WKXA through the 90s when it was like, that was the heyday for like
morning pop, talk radio.
Adult contemporary fun radio.
Sure.
Morning
so
zoo
for
type
you,
stuff.
This guy's kind of like he's a local celebrity.
Tom Summers? Oh my gosh.
Okay.
So he walks into the Macomb basketball game, and I'm up there playing drums, you know, up on the little pep band set. And Tommy comes walking in. A whisper that went through the student section. It was like, Tom Summers. Tom Summers over there. Holy kiss, Tom Summers. And Brittany Aukerman, who will surprise, this will surprise no one, has a really big mouth. And she stands up and she goes, Tom! And he stands up and he turns around and he waved at the student section. Everybody cheered. And I was like, I want to be that guy. Mm. And so when it came time to start doing radio for a career, and I'm talking like I'm really going to dedicate myself to it, I went and knocked on the door at WKXA, which is a station I grew up listening to. Jerry Wise was on the air and he was the program director, which will make Dave Glass laugh if he hears this because I mentioned Jerry Wise. And I said, hey, I've been working over at the university. I want to do radio. What do I need to do to get on WKXA? And he goes, typical radio dude, just condescending, man. He goes, well, go get some experience, kid, and come back. And I said, that's what I'm trying to do, man. And if I'm honest, it kind of horked me off. It made me angry. And so I said, okay. I said, okay, I'm going to go to your competition, and then I'm going to come back and smoke you.
Oh,
and so
nice.
I went to Kahuna, and I'm like, dude, can I get on the air with you? And I job shadowed him on the air during a morning show. He would not say my name because he knew all my buddies were listening, and he that's how he is.
So he just loved to like hold that over you?
Called me job shadow for 4 hours.
Oh, that is awesome.
Did the morning show with him.
I'm so glad I shouted out to Kahuna to start this.
And that was really, that was the start of a beautiful friendship.
Either that or like just abuse that you've been hanging on to. I'm not sure.
And now for session 4 of therapy with there are, Big
yeah there are it's times like, I kind of wanted to make fun of you, but now I kind of think maybe you need therapy.
Man, you don't even know the half of it, brother.
You're a Browns fan. There's a lot of things about you that are cries out for help,
primarily scar tissue at this point. But that's how it started.
So Kahuna gave you your first real opportunity of actually getting to experience, like, hey man, this is what it's like to be full shift on the radio.
Yeah. And we were over at the building in Ottawa, the bank building, which was haunted. The elevator was behind you, so you're sitting at the console looking at a wall, and there's a long hallway like from The Shining and an elevator at the back, and that thing would just middle the night. I mean, you're working midnight to 6 a.m in a huge building, empty, and that elevator would just, the doors would open,
somebody just gets off,
nobody would get off that you could see. And then the doors would shut and it would go back down. And
sounds perfectly normal.
It would just, yeah. That's elevators do maintenance cycles, apparently. I don't know. I don't know anything about that. But I know that was scary. But I only did a handful of shifts over there before the station moved to Findlay, and then things changed pretty dramatically from there. The first time I was ever like commercial radio, this is my air shift, would have been my senior year of high school, working at 106.3 over on Tiffin Avenue. And it was a midnight to six Friday night and Saturday night. I did that for a long time. Yeah, that would have been like 97. I must have done something right because I kept getting promoted. Or other people kept quitting or dying. I don't know.
What do you think is the coolest experience radio has taken you to personally?
I anticipated you were going to ask me that. And this is a horrible answer to this question. There are two.
All right. Well, that's all right.
The first one was Robert Plant put out a record on a record label that I just happened to know a guy at. It was on Universal Records, and it was an album of covers. It was called Dreamland, and Robert Plant being the lead singer in Led Zeppelin. I'll make sure I put that out there. And there's a certain reverence for me with him, because without him, rock and roll isn't what it is. Widely regarded as the greatest frontman of all time. And because it was Led Zeppelin, and that's what Rand turned me on to. I mean, it's a very special thing for me. Anyway, so I knew a guy at his record label. And I said, hey, he's going to be in Cleveland. Would love the opportunity just to thank him. Just to shake his hand and say thanks. Which is all you ever say to an artist, by the way. If you ever meet an artist.
Hi and bye. Keep it moving.
Yeah, but thank him. Shake their hand and thank him. And they are the coolest people. If you treat them like an artist, they turn into, the ego gets them. But if you treat them like a human who did something great, and thank them for it, they're a lot more humble. And so anyway, so the guy at the label was like, yeah, come over to the show. We'll try to get you into the meet and greet. Robert Plant doesn't do meet and greets. I mean, there's not a lineup of people to shake his hand and take a photo. He's Robert Plant. But we got a chance to spend, me, Kahuna, a buddy of ours, Tony, got a chance to spend, I don't know, 10 minutes with Robert Plant.
Oh, nice.
Coolest thing ever.
So you got like an extended stay.
He is exactly who you wanted him to be. Hung out for a little bit, drinking tea, shaking hands. I got a photo with him. I got it up on my wall in my office in front of me. So getting to meet Robert Plant, shake his hand, got an autograph of this cool, and I felt bad, but there's this great photo of him from 1973, standing there like wearing a blouse, but it's open and just full on rock star, right? And I'm like, Mr. Plant, would you please sign my photo? And I'm handing him this picture. And here he is at that point, he's like 58 years old, and he's looking at this bare-chested version of his 19-year-old self.
He said, man, I look good.
So he signed it, and so meeting Robert Plant was right up there.
Very full-circle, yeah, kind of your growing up experience, yeah, meets your, hey, man, this guy made the music that really set me into music.
100%. So that's one. And the second one, the coolest experience, was 2005 when Hurricane Katrina happened. Especially now when I look back on this, given the environment that we all live in right now, that's just wound so tight and people are so divided about every little
anything.
Thing. The community really came together to try to support the people who were displaced and try to support people who lost homes and just try to help somebody, which I thought was the coolest thing. And we came up with this idea. We're going to team up with this trucking company. We're going to do a collection drive of water and diapers and formula and all the stuff that people needed, hooked up with the Red Cross. And we just happened to have a location out there on Tiffin Avenue. This was in the 106.3 and 103.7 days when we worked for all of us, Kahuna, myself, and some of our friends worked for what's now iHeart. We thought we'd do it for a couple of days and it would fizzle out. For 7 days, people kept supporting it. 24-hour broadcast from the parking lot, and people would show up and they'd drop off cases of water, and then Ohio Logistics would show up with a pallet of stuff, and we had a forklift. I learned how to drive a forklift, and we would do the whole thing and fill up a trailer, a 53-foot semi-trailer of stuff. And then we ended up doing that three more times. We thought we'd fill maybe one, and we filled three.
Wow.
And then, because we had to hook up with the trucking company, I was like, can we go with you and do radio from the road to where the hurricane happened?
Basically tell people, hey, here's what's going on.
So, yeah. And so when you do a donation drive like that, a lot of times people give and then they just hope it gets where it's going. And now we're able to show them. I'm jumping off a truck in Gulfport, Mississippi, you know, handing the water that you donated to me to somebody who needs it.
That's pretty awesome.
And it was really, we weren't prepared for it. Kahuna and I got in the truck and just brought a computer and a microphone with us. And we did radio all the way down. and 15 hours and slept in an abandoned gas station that had been completely destroyed, and then woke up the next morning and went and started handing stuff out to people and drove down to the beach, to the Gulf, where these houses, these, you know, multi-million dollar beachfront houses, is just a slab of concrete and a gas line sticking up out of the ground. They're gone. They're just gone. And talked to people who lost their homes and jobs. And the coolest thing about that was that the community came together, but also people who, radio is a pretty competitive industry. It's a small fraternity of people and we don't like each other sometimes, but we were able to say, okay, this station was 106.3. And then we pulled in WKXA and Smoke and Joe Bacon and Mike Stevens and that group of people came and broadcast from our building to help their listeners stop by and donate stuff. And then Keith and Beth, or at that time it was Tom Summers, it was Tom and Beth over on WBVI, came over and broadcasted from our location, and their listeners were able to come and donate stuff.
So for you, this was like an awesome, like an awesome moment that grew way bigger than you guys ever anticipated of a real sense of true community, people actually coming together, really helping each other in a time of need. And I mean, you had, everybody had to feel good about that, right?
Yeah. And that's the only time in the history of my career that I can ever think of working with a competitive radio station in a collaborative sense. And so we got to do what we did best, which was be a mouthpiece for people and bring a community together. And that's what makes radio so cool, so vital for small towns like that.
Now, you and Kahuna are both, you guys do a thing called Two Big Guys Entertainment, where you guys go out and do kind of weddings and different corporate events, et cetera, DJ them. I would say you guys, beyond that also, you guys are pretty charitable. You want to kind of talk about some things you guys do and some fundraisers you guys kind of get going, and you know, the kind of, you just talked about giving to the community. I think these things kind of play a part in that as well.
Yeah. I guess I should tell you, I'm sure you know this, but I don't do the morning show anymore. I stepped away from that a couple of years ago.
That's what I was telling Jeff, and I don't remember what he does now, but I left.
So Kahuna and I started working together when I was, you know, late in high school, and he kind of mentored me through learning how to do radio. We were able to do, so like the golf outing was one of them. We said we wanted to do something that would really speak to the locality of our radio stations, because a lot of radio now is owned by, you know, a monolith from San Antonio.
Sure. Giant media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we had a group of local owners that were really investing in the community. And we said we want to do some things to give back. Now, nobody's getting rich doing local radio, so we had to find a way to raise the money. So we started the golf outing. We called it the Battle the Bigs Charity Golf Scramble. And it was a chance for people during the summer, they'd come out, and we'd do a contest where you register on the website and you could come and play golf with me and Kahuna. Now, play golf is a strong way of saying what we did. We smoked cigars and drank beer.
And, and raised money for a good cause.
Raised money for a good cause, yeah. And then the people that won that contest got to come and play on our golf scramble for free. And then at the end of the season, we did a scramble, you know, a couple $100 to get signed up to be in the scramble. And then we took that money and we rotated around to different charities every year to give it to. So it started with Cancer Patient Services, and then we moved it to Hancock Literacy there for a while. And, you know, it's rotated around. We didn't want to always give to the same organization. We wanted to kind of share the love a little bit. So that continues on now. This year, I think it's 11 or 12 years now this year. And they're raising money for the Cops for Kids program in Findlay, which is a pretty cool thing.
Very cool.
Gliding Stars is one that has kind of held on for us as well. I think Kahuna and I both, I don't want to speak for him, but I've been doing it for 25 years, so why stop?
Sure.
We both have a heart for people who have a hard time in life. And so when Gliding Stars approached me 11 years ago to MC their ice show, I immediately said yes. I love doing things to support people that generally are kind of pushed to the side mm-hmm. in the community, and I want to bring them into the spotlight a little bit. And I realized pretty quickly I didn't want to do it by myself. So I said, hey, Kahuna, why don't we do this thing together? So we did last month, we did our 10th Gliding Stars ice show together. It's so much fun, man. Those stars just worked their tails off to get that ice show
awesome
choreographed. And this year they brought in big LED screens, and it was a rock show this year. So we got to talk about rock, which is fun.
Oh, cool. That's like your guys' natural element,
though. Yeah. And so, yeah, we did your wedding, and I remember I screwed up at your wedding. I think I said your best man's name wrong.
That's all right.
And he never lets me forget it, because I've seen him at a few.
And then we had another dude about fell into your equipment.
No, he did fall into our equipment. Did. That's and right. He's dead to me now.
Oh, God.
Every time I do a wedding and I have to move that freaking light that he bent, I get mad.
Shout out to you, Clay Lily.
There you go, Clay Lily.
You still have that light even.
Yeah, I still have it. I mean, I didn't
actually
replace
you can't
it.
Get rid of it at this point.
It's probably got his DNA on it now. I think it's got some of his like forehead skin stuck to the side of it.
Now, what is your I know you've told me in the past, I don't know if it's you and Kahuna or you and your wife do something with St. Jude. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What's your connection to that, or how did you get linked up with that?
Yeah, St. Jude, gosh, I'm glad you mentioned that. So for a number of years, I worked in Lima at a group of radio stations down there. And one of them was the country station that had been doing a St. Jude radiothon for years. And because that's sort of country radio has a very close connection with St. Jude. It goes back to Randy Owen from Alabama, kind of put it together in the early 80s. And I didn't know much about it, but I had started at that radio station like a month before the radiothon. And I regret to this day, my first radiothon, I didn't know what I was doing. Didn't know what I was talking about. I knew that St. Jude was a kids' cancer hospital, but I didn't know much about it. And I just kind of went through the motions. They sent me a binder and I just kind of read the stuff. And I said, I got to do better than that next year. So I went to Memphis, and that's where St. Jude is located. I said, I want to get to know the doctors. I want to get to know the parents.
What am I actually talking about?
Teach me this stuff. And that was a life changer, man. You've got kids. I got kids. And I sit and talk to parents. I sat in the chapel at St. Jude, which is not a place you want to find yourself, and read through this book of parents who were writing, you know, they're in there with their 8-year-old who's got lymphoma.
They're dying.
Or leukemia. And look, when this is a hard thing to say, when a 85-year-old person who has smoked for their entire life and, you know, drank their entire life gets lung cancer and dies, that's really sad.
People but you can make sense of it.
People are shocked by it, but people are not surprised by it. That person mm-hmm. knew the risks. They lived their life the way they wanted to live their life. This is what happens. When an 8-year-old dies of leukemia, that kid had nothing to do with that. And there's no way to make sense of that. And so I was really, really moved through that. And I visited St. Jude a handful of times after that too. But was really, really moved to use the power of local radio to try to support local families who were using the research that was being done at St. Jude to save their kids' lives. And a good friend of mine who was on the radio show with me in Lima, actually, when she was a kid, her parents thought she had some sort of cancer, and her dad was a country radio jock, knew about St. Jude from country radio, and was like, oh, she'll be fine, we'll take her to St. Jude. And it's that sort of like nationwide influence that St. Jude has, which is through their research and the fundraising that local radio stations helped do to help fund that really turned my head toward it. So it got, you know, that was my first year in Lima. That was probably 2007. And I was there through 2011. We did a radiothon every year. And probably the highlight of that was we brought in Josh Turner to do a concert, fundraising concert for St. Jude, where, you know, you donate, it's like $20 a month. They call it a Partner in Hope level donation. You got a free ticket to see Josh Turner. We put him in the Civic Center at Lima. Great fun show. And then the following year, we were able to have Little Big Town come and do that show.
Nice.
And talk about awesome. So a lot of my career has been at rock radio. A lot of it's been at country radio. They're different kinds of people. when I talked to Little Big Town's management about it, they were sort of like, I don't know, it's Ohio. Like, we're going to have to find a way to route a tour through there, blah, 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 blah. When I talked to Karen from Little Big Town about it, she said, anything for those babies.
Mm.
They were super supportive. We were
kind of sad though, man. I bet you that happens more times than you would think of, like, people who think maybe, you know, these celebrities or artists are one way because of the perception that's given, when in reality, like, most of them probably control none of their social media. They don't have the, just like you just said, most of the time you're not even going to talk to the artists themselves. You're going to talk to their management team, to where they're so insulated. You don't even actually probably really know how they think or what they want.
Well, and some of 100%, that's true. Management's job is as a gatekeeper, right? Because if everybody got to the artist would never have time to create art.
Yeah, that's fair.
So you have to, I mean,
the scary thing is, though, is who are the gatekeepers that are getting put in place, yeah. I guess, is yeah. the Well, that's the question you got to ask there.
Where's the money is the other thing.
Yeah, sure.
But especially with country artists and country radio, the connection to St. Jude is really, really great.
So American culture, we push and promote an idea. Kids can be anything they want to be. And so we ask little Johnny, hey, when you grow up, what do you want to be? And so we've all got our dream and our ideas of what that's going to be. And whether you're an artist for painting or music, radio, you get into it and you find out that what you thought it was, I don't care what profession you pick, we all bump into this, gatekeepers. You find that it's not what you thought it was going to be. And to some degree, we all have to mute ourselves to sit in the seats that we want to sit in. As a person who speaks for a living, how do you navigate and not get lost in your person as you be a proxy for the person writing your paycheck?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I worked for a company called Clear Channel, which is now iHeartRadio. I worked for a company called Maverick Media, which is a small sort of regional operator, but like the owner would be in the building all the time. So a little bit bigger local operator. And I worked for Findlay Publishing Company, which is, they own the newspaper, they own the radio stations, bedrock Findlay family community oriented organization. I've never had anybody come and tell me, don't say that. Never had anybody come and tell me, this is the angle that you're going to take on this story. I've never had any sort of directive about what I say or do. Now, that doesn't mean I haven't had repercussions for things right. that I've said right. or done. There were times when I said, I'm not, and I would love to give you more detail on this, but I can't tell you the whole story.
Right.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
There were times when I said, I'm not going to do that interview because I can't bring myself to sit across a table from that person and be authentic with them. Mm. And my boss said, oh, you're going to do the interview. Mm. And I said, I'm going to be on vacation that day. My fill-in will do the interview. So there was never you'll say this. There was never a, this is where your political angle is going to be on it. But it was, you're going to serve this community, whether you agree with that particular organization or not, which is the right way to do it. Honestly. And I remember going, okay, I see where you're at. You're right. I can't do it. And I'm not angry about it. I'm not flipping right. people off about it.
You're just like, hey man, that's just not my role.
I can't sit across from that person and have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But
not
it's
saying
not,
it shouldn't happen. It just shouldn't be done by me.
Yeah, it's also not
I can't be that person you're yeah. wanting me to be.
Right.
And you have the results you're looking for.
And it's and the truth is, it wasn't my radio station. That wasn't my call to make. It was my show. But the only reason it was my show is because they let me use their signal to do the show.
Be like me, you asking me to fix your electric car. It wouldn't.
It's not you.
Broken. Yeah. I can try, but
it's not me either.
Good.
So the only thing I'll say to that is that no one's ever told me what to say.
But did you know intuitively what not to say?
Well, I'm not stupid.
Right. So that's what I'm talking about. How did you navigate that line? Like, I mean, in order for you to be where you are, you have to have a pretty good filter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and there have been times.
That's why you started a side business, a DJ business.
That's why I do the DJ. I say whatever I want at a wedding, man.
How do you every day navigate that road? Yeah. I want to say that, but I really shouldn't.
So what I ask myself, there are three, this is PR 101, man. Does this need to be said? Does this need to be said by me? Does this need to be said by me right now? And I learned to not get into the emotion of things, especially when it's a hot button topic. I get into the facts of things, but I think I can say confidently in 20 plus years of doing radio, no one knows where I sit politically. I've never talked about it. I've never even given a lean to it. Now, I did drive an electric vehicle here today, so I'm guessing you're guessing where I'm at politically. But I've never tipped my hat to, or never tipped my hand to any of that stuff. That's not my job. I mean, my job as a radio personality is to give people some place to have fun, to reflect a community back to them, and to kind of maybe give a pleasant release of the bull that everybody deals with every day.
You're like the old school sense of, hey, man, let's put things back where they belong. We don't need politics and music, and we don't need politics and sports. And we
right.
Let's put things where they belong. People come to these things as escapes or, they're distractions, right?
Well, I can't make you laugh doing anything political. I can make you laugh doing just about anything else, and that's all I want. Now, I would do stuff like the good stuff where I would touch you, you know, with an emotional story that is a positive. But, you know, I don't think I ever approached on the radio anyway anything with a lens of I want you to think the way that I think about it. Mostly my approach has been I want you to have fun. I want you to enjoy this. Maybe you learn something about an artist you didn't know before, or you have a chance to live vicariously through some of the experiences that I had, or that guys like Tyler got to have by going to meet Florida Georgia Line or whoever. I can tell stories about, you know, meeting and hanging with Motley Crue or other rock people that maybe the everyday person doesn't have a chance to do, and I can kind of make them feel what it's like. But I don't think it's ever been an
issue that's really been on the forefront of you for you kind of just taking your own approach, like you just said, based on your own three pillars of, do I need to say that? Does it need to be said by me? Does it need to be said right now?
Well, I'm not saying I've never stepped over that.
Sure. Okay. That's where I want to get.
That's kind of your metric of like, that's how you govern yourself.
Because you know, the older you get and the impact you've seen, the power of persuasion that you have. Okay. So you're going to check yourself and you're going to be, I hate to say it this way, but you're going to be a parrot as a proxy for your person writing your paychecks. And I saw how you navigated that. There's certain things you will and won't say, right? So you have a conscience there. But like your situation with St. Jude, you didn't have to do that.
No.
So that was something that you said, you know what? Pause. I'm going to be a voice for this. I want to give it a spotlight. It needs one.
Yeah.
So that was one for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are some issues. Now, it wasn't controversial.
No.
But it was something that wasn't happy, wasn't funny, wasn't your normal schlick, if you will. Like, this is your thing you always do, but this needs to be said.
Yeah.
Like, how do you have to have had some situations where you knew your silence or your voice in this situation is going to have waves of impact. How do you pick those?
Well, I'll tell you, the only things that I ever really got really emotionally invested in when it came to radio are things that mattered to me. And that's why I said at the beginning with St. Jude, I was embarrassed by the first radiothon I did because it didn't matter to me yet. I didn't know enough about it. And I didn't have kids at that point. And it was just, I didn't believe in what we were doing. Like, why are we giving up airtime to an out-of-town thing?
Right.
Then I got to know it a little bit more, and I got to know some of the local people who were affected by it, and it became an emotional investment for me. So there are a few of those things. St. Jude's one of them. The thing we did with Hurricane Katrina was one of them. Mm-hmm. Gliding Stars, again, is another one that's important to me.
So it's almost for you, it kind of sounds like the issues that you find, hey, I need to speak about this, is kind of if you just feel led to, you feel a passion for them.
Or if they're not getting the spotlight I think they should get, when I had a chance to put a spotlight on it, I did.
Now that you're into the parenting game with two kids, what would you give as advice to somebody who's maybe just entering that game, or what's your experience been thus far?
Well, first, did I dance around that enough for you, Jeff? Was that all right?
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah, I mean,
tiptoeing.
Well, I want to piggyback on what Tyler just asked you is like, you know, so what advice can you give your own children about how not to get lost? How not to get lost in the very tension that we just discussed?
Yeah. Well, I my son, who is sitting beside me, knows, I think.
No, he does.
He was, when I told Bennett a few years ago that I was looking at moving away from the morning show, I told him, I'll never forget it, and you probably have already forgotten it. I told him in the car on the way to school one day, I was like, what would you think if I wasn't on the radio anymore? And he started crying. And he was like, I want you to be on the radio. I was like, okay, just put the fire out. But the more we talked about it, I hope Bennett understands this, and I hope my daughter Karis does too. There was a moment for me where on a Saturday, I had to do a remote at a car dealership. It's pretty standard. It's probably 3 weeks out of the year, three Saturdays out of a month, we're going to be doing a remote somewhere at that point. Now, he was just starting to play sports. So he was playing flag football, and we were at the little YMCA in Bluffton. And he's got his flag football team out there. And this is a bunch of like six-year-olds who are playing flag football for the first time. They don't know how to line up. They don't know what's what. And so the coaches are trying to wrangle him. And it's taking
chaos.
A long time.
It's running around.
Total chaos.
Everybody figuring it out.
And I'm standing there and I'm watching. And I know 10 o'clock, I got to be on the other side of Findlay at a car dealer to do a remote. And it's like 9:20. I drove the van there, the radio station van. It's in the parking lot. I'm wearing the logo polo shirt. Like, I'm ready to go. And at the last possible second, I'm going to leave this game to go do this remote. And I'm watching, and they're not run. They can't get the kids lined up to run plays. Like, they're just trying to figure it all out. And it's like, oh, it's 9:25. No, it's 9:30. It's 9:38. I got to be on the other side of Findlay, and I'm in Bluffton. And I know I'm going to have to leave. And I'm watching my kid stand there trying to get figured out what he's going to do. And I'm walking backwards through the parking lot, watching this game, try to get started. And I'm trying to get to the van at the last, I mean, I'm talking the last possible second. And I know he's watching me walk away to go do my job on a Saturday when I haven't been home from 4 a.m. to you know, three in the afternoon all week. And I'm going to leave my kid's game to go sell cars. And I don't know if that bothered him, but that was the moment where I was like, I got to talk about doing something different. I got to figure something else out because this is the stuff that's important to me. My dad was a plant manager at a manufacturer here in town. And even in my junior high football days, we're playing games at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. My dad was in the stands. And during junior high track, when I thought I was a high jumper, I was 6'5", like 285, thinking I was a high jumper. Yeah. My dad was there to watch me do it, and it meant something to me.
Barely getting over credit cards.
That's a fact. Turns out I was a shot putter.
That was incredibly important, and you never forgot that.
No, that was the moment.
Every time I looked in the stands, my parents were there for me.
Yeah, or I would fall on the mat, and my dad would go, good job, Dave. And so I'm at every swim meet. I think I maybe have missed one to go do somebody's wedding. But I'm at every swim meet and I'm at every track meet, or if my daughter has a soccer game, you know, sometimes we have to split time, but it's important to me to be there for my kids, and the job was starting to get in the way.
So you decided, like, that's not going to happen. There's not going to be that wedge between us of, hey, you know, my career is never going to come before my children.
No. And it came before a lot. I mean, I told you I didn't have the college experience a lot of people have because I put radio in front of it. Mm-hmm. I would tell you that the week before my wedding, I was in Gulfport, Mississippi, delivering storm aid materials instead of helping my wife plan our wedding. And when I came back, I hadn't paid the electric bill, and the electric in the house got shut off.
Oh,
because,
man,
I was so concentrated on that radio thing that I didn't pay attention to my life.
You're lucky to still be married, my friend.
Dude, you have no idea.
So for you, though, this seems like when you had the experience of children, this seems to be like for you the first passion that pulled you away from radio. Sounds like your first passion until you had children, and that now sounds like your first passion.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, radio was the thing that got me out of bed, and it was also that put me in bed because I worked overnights for so long.
Sure.
But then when I had kids, yeah, it changed things a lot. And I stopped caring. Two things. One, I stopped caring so much about what the general public thought of what I was doing. And that is difficult when you work in radio because it's your job to care what the general public thinks about what you're doing.
Sure. So that was kind of hard for you to separate from the what does everybody think about me? I mean, in the Bible, we got King Saul kind of struggled with that same, cared so much about what everybody thought, made him often hesitant to move forward with what really should be done.
Well, and it makes it hard to be who you really are, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
And so when I had kids, it made it a lot easier for me to say, you know, I don't really care what his new single is anymore.
it's hard
for me to go on the air and be like, hey, let me tell you about this great new song that he's putting out that he didn't write that has, you know, 14 songwriters on it that are all making the money on it. And it's going to be another single in 3 weeks because the thing's going to stiff. Uh-huh. I can't go on the air and say that stuff. Mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't have gone on your podcast and said that. But it really, it stopped mattering to me. What mattered to me is whether my kids knew that I loved them and supported them.
Sure.
And whether I could be a present father and partner for my wife.
So I'm going to assume your advice out of the question I asked you through that story would be that your experience through having kids, if you would give advice to somebody, would be that don't put the other things that maybe seem important in the moment right now above basically your family and making sure that things at home are in the proper order before anything else.
Sure. But also I'll give it a caveat there. Know what's important for you.
Sure. Well, I mean, I would like to assume if you're having children, that should be important.
That's not a safe assumption, my friend. Not.
Unfortunately, you're right, but it should be.
Let me tell you about some other people I know.
I see plenty of those stories. You know, that's a tension we all face. I don't care who you are. We're all pulled by different people in different directions. And to some degree, we find ourselves prostituting ourselves with the gifts that God gave us to somebody else's benefit. Sadly, many people look back on their life with regret because they gave away their most precious moments to a cause they didn't believe in. And if they could do it over, they would have done it differently. And the way you navigated that was you've been given a value system. Your mom had a huge impact on you, even about your career you've gone into. And you've experienced and enjoyed, rode that tsunami of a wave of support. And you want to be the same for your kids. And we're trying again to leave this place better than we found it.
Yeah. I think one of the questions I think one of you asked me was, what would I tell my kids, you know, about following what they love?
Yeah. How do you not get lost in all of this? Oh. Like what peace can you give them so that they don't get lost like the rest of us do?
Yeah. Really, it's about defining for yourself what's important to you and then just remembering that. And my kids remind me all the time because I see them every day. I'm really lucky, man. I see my kids every day. I take them to school 99% of the time. I take them in the morning and pick them up in the afternoon. And if there's a way to stay grounded, it's spending time with your kids because they won't let your head get too big.
But you're getting to do what's important to you every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't ever feel a day go by where I'm like, man, that was a waste.
Right. And think about how lucky you are, though, like you just said, because so many people do just that.
Well, it's also about knowing what, I know I've said this, but it's about knowing what's important. So it's important to me to be in the car with my kids and learning about their day, even if they're blowing up at me, right?
What I heard you say is be present also in that moment.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, we're in our head space thinking about what's next. Be present in that moment.
I do fall into that, man. That's a great point, because I do fall into this. I should be doing this. I'll sit in the living room with my kids and we'll watch. Don't judge me as a parent for this. I have a 9-year-old daughter as well. Bent here is almost 13. And so we've been watching Ted Lasso. I know there's language in Ted Lasso. It's probably not appropriate for my 9-year-old. Don't come at me for that.
Canceled.
Wait, what's it going to hurt me now, Tyler? But there are times when we'll sit and we'll watch TV and I go, man, I don't want to sit here. I want to be outside. I want to go mow the yard. I want to go work on my car. I want to go out to the barn. There's a million things I feel like I should be doing.
So you got to bring yourself back to being present.
Just like, remind myself
what I should be doing.
I'm right sitting on the couch watching TV with my kids. Mm-hmm. This kid's somehow going to be 13 years old. He's gone in 5 years,
You're
man.
You're going to be beating up on dad pretty soon, I think.
That happens fairly often.
That's good.
But I got 5 summers left with him, if I'm lucky.
You have good perspective. I like that.
Well, thank you. And then my daughter, same way. I mean, I've got just a handful of these moments where she still likes me, and I want to be there for her.
Bennett laughs like, I'm not so sure she does already.
He gave up on that when he was about 8. But there are times when I feel pulled, like I should be, I have this anxiety that I'm not doing what I ought to be doing. And then I got to remind myself, dude, this is what you ought to be doing. The car is going to be there. I've been restoring the same car for 30 years. It's going to be there tomorrow. You know, these kids, I only have a really finite amount of time with them. They care about what we're doing together.
Or your car you're fixing.
Well, he does.
You're a VW guy also?
Well, he wants to drive it to college.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Smart man. Smart man. Now, you've transitioned, though. You said you've now, since you've left the radio, you made that decision, hey, man, this is a... I love radio. It's a passion of mine, but I got to move on to something different so I can be there for my family. What did you end up getting into?
Well, I'll tell you this. I do still work at the radio station. I'm a part-time employee. And so I do, I'm on the air from 10 to 2 weekdays and then from 3 to 7 on the weekends. But it's not, I don't go to the studio and do it live.
So you can do a lot of stuff with the advancements in technology. You can do a lot of stuff from your house now.
Do it from the studio in my basement, which is, you know, I built it during COVID when we were doing everything from home. I was doing the morning show live from my basement during COVID for a number of months there under the air hockey table because it was the quietest part in the basement.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I had a bunch of pillows and blankets and stuff under the air hockey table. I'd lay down there and do a radio show. But so I do the midday show and the thing on the weekend, but it's not at all like it was. It's not off the cuff live. It's
kind of pre-recorded.
It's a little more background music for me. And for a lot of people, I'm not paying that careful of attention to what I'm saying, if I'm honest, because people are on about their day. It's not like in the morning when people are really paying attention.
Sure.
So we're there for entertainment, but I'm not there as a main character anymore. So what I do now is I work at Family Resource Center. And I know what you're thinking. Family Resource Center, well, that's that place out on Broad Avenue, right? And no, that's Blanchard Avenue. That's the Family Center. Family Resource Center is a nonprofit organization that does behavioral health, so mental health and addiction counseling and recovery.
All right.
And this organization, when I was doing the morning show, a friend of mine was working at Family Resource Center. And she would come in, they had a grant, and she would come in and talk about some of the things that they're doing. And I said, you know, I do every bakery bingo, nonprofit purse raffle event in Hancock County. I've never heard of you guys. I don't know anything about you. Why don't I see you at any of this stuff? Because we're talking about suicide prevention with kids. We're talking about kids who live with abusive trauma in their lives and what that does to them as an adult with some of the mental illnesses that happen.
Sure.
We talk about people who had a routine surgery for a broken leg and got prescribed a painkiller.
Now they've got an addiction.
And they can't get off it.
So, I mean, this is, you've stumbled across here once again, something else that really matters to you. You've been using your three pillars of, hey, maybe I should speak on this, and right now is a good time.
Well, and the smart thing that my friend did was she came on my show, and I said, why don't I see you? Why don't people know about what you're doing? It's incredibly important work. And she said, we don't have anybody doing community relations. And I said, you need to find somebody. Because especially at this point, this is in the height of COVID. I mean, who wasn't living with anxiety and stress during...
I think many people still are.
It's all still there. Yes. Yeah. It just became okay during that to talk about it. And so... A few days later, there was a job description on my dining room table because she had gone to my wife and said, hey, you think Dave would be interested in this?
He said, we need a communications guy.
And I said, you know, I'm not interested in that. And my wife was like, we should read the job description. I said, no, I'm a radio guy. She goes, read the job description. And I did. And I thought, you know what? Everybody has a story, I think, in their lives of someone they know or knew who lived with some sort of mental illness, whether it was, you know, the anxiety or stress or depression, or if you had somebody you know who died by suicide or had an attempt, or if you know somebody who lived with addiction or any of that stuff. We all know somebody, and maybe even it's us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who has lived through some of those things.
Sure.
And I thought, this is a great opportunity for me who has some name recognition in this community to be able to say, it's okay to talk to somebody. Hey, farmer buddies who are running a fifth generation family farm and the world has changed to the point where you're not sure you can handle that farm and the money's drying up and the weather's not cooperating and you feel like you might lose that farm and you're turning into booze or you're sitting by yourself out in your shop wondering how you're going to pay those vendors.
Right, like what you need is a conversation.
What you need is somebody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to do that. It's okay as men to not say, I got this, because how could you? Got this. You know, being a parent is hard. Being a man is difficult because you put these expectations on yourself that you're always going to know what to do.
That's why I'm still a boy.
That you got. It takes a strong man to admit that, Tyler. But it takes somebody to say, bro, I got you. and pick you up, throw you over my shoulder, and say, I'm one of you, man. I don't have it together, and I don't know what to do, and I need somebody to talk to. So sure. That's what I do at FRC.
Okay.
Is kind of help
that
spread that
extending
word.
Hand that says those things.
Yeah, and I get to do some fun things, too. I mean, I'm producing some videos, and I got to make a little superhero thing the other day, which was a good time. And I brought my daughter into a Week of the Young Child thing a couple of years ago, and we played some music together as a way of kind of breaking the ice with people. And I've gotten to know another side of this community that I still love, but I still think needs a spotlight.
Mm. Well, hey, man, thanks for joining us. And it sounds in your circumstances, you know, I don't know where you give the credit, but I'm going to say where I'd give your credit is... It seems as though God has navigated you into some pretty cool callings of, you know, your early experiences from your college days to later on when you transitioned out of your first passion radio to, you know, really, really spend time with your family and your children. It kind of sounds as though, you know, you're getting to put those skills that you developed over the past 15, 20 years to use in a new capacity, but one I would say that actually has... You know, not that people don't appreciate music and radio, but now what you're doing sounds like it really has some true meaning, and that's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, it's been a pretty awesome ride so far. I had the time of my life doing radio, man. I really did. And I'm not positive I'm totally done with that part of my life, but... Yeah,
just done for now.
Yeah, just done for now.
Fair enough. Well, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Thanks, man.
This has been Blindly Obvious. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com. where you can catch up on past episodes as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. Peace, love, and God bless. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
Past the signs each day, in little things missed along the way, the symbols hidden in glamour's light, blindly obvious, but out of sight. The magician's lie, a trick so good you don't ask why. The truth, it sits with open arms, but we fool ourselves with deception's charm. Can you see it too?
Oh, I can see it. The roads lead back to you.